Welcome to Global Leader Radio, sponsored by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, discussing ideas that matter with people who care. Now here's your host, Director of Business Development and Instructor of Management for the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University, Alvin Miles.
Well, happy Tuesday and welcome to episode 46 of Global Leader Radio. And they said it wouldn't last this long, Kevin.
I know. What were they thinking?
It's just impressive, right? You've been brilliant. And the purpose of our show is to engage in conversations that highlight our guests, educate our learning community, and add value to all who seek to optimize their leadership acumen. And we achieve this purpose by providing our learning community with key takeaways, including resources and advice that have led to the personal and professional success of our guests. And we've got some great ones today. And the topic for today's show is engagement. Is it fact or fantasy? And so we're going to have some thoughts about building and leveraging an engaged organization for greater organizational success. And today we welcome Gary Jones, Sean Hart, and Chad Wright to Global Leader Radio. Gary Jones is the Chief Human Resources Officer at Grizzard Communications Group, and he has over 20 years of corporate-level human resources experience in a diverse set of industries, including marketing services, specialty retail, wholesale, and not-for-profit. Gary is noted for expertise in a wide range of leadership strengths, including strategic planning and integrating HR as a strategic component of business. In 2010, he was awarded a 2010 SHAPE Award by SHRM Atlanta for achievement of professional excellence in human resources. He holds graduate degrees in administration as well as counseling and has served as a board member and advisor to several business and community groups, including SHRM Atlanta, Career Spa with our good friend Tom Darrow, and Baptist Medical Center. His primary hobbies and interests revolve around guitars, classic rock, unsuccessful attempts to lower his golf handicap, and that's his words, not mine, folks, because I think he's fantastic on the golf course, and last but not least, he enjoys travel as well. We also welcome Sean Hart to Global Leader Radio. Sean is the president of Global Development Partners, and he serves to position GDP as a contract of choice by leading, motivating, and growing a regional team of employees, subcontractors, and consultants. He's responsible for all of the company's operations and sets company policy, financial benchmarks, cost and quality standards, and client satisfaction. And prior to founding GDP in 2004, Sean was a project manager with John Whelan Homes in Atlanta and a partner with Nelson & Sons Construction in Redmond, Washington. Sean has a Bachelor of Arts degree in finance from Seattle University and is first aid as well as CPR certified, which I imagine comes in very handy when you're dealing in the contracting world, correct?
That's an understatement.
And we also have Chad Wright. And Chad serves as VP or Vice President and a project executive for Georgia Development Partners. In this role, Chad is responsible for identifying, promoting, and pursuing new market opportunities for GDP, obviously the lifeblood of any business. So along with Sean, Chad participates in the short and long-term growth strategies for the company. Now, Chad began his career as an environmental engineering consultant, and he and his team led in the development, marketing, and operational staffing of a top 10 golf course as rated by Golf Digest. Now, why does it always come down to golf? It's fantastic. He joined GDP in 2010, and he applies his knowledge and experience to ensure the company continues to be a trustworthy, dependable company for their clients. Chad has a Bachelor of Arts degree in biology with a business minor from the University of Richmond and a Master of Environmental Management from Duke University. Chad is affiliated with the American Water Resources Association, and he's also first aid and CPR certified. So apparently, Gary, that's going to be very important for this conversation.
Absolutely.
Today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who knows what could happen? We might need to be revived.
Sometimes it takes two. It's good to have.
So, gentlemen, welcome to Global Leader Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Gary, let's begin with you. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Alvin. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. You look fantastic today. So, to begin, please tell us a little bit about Gary Jones,
sure.
Starting with your original birthplace and a little bit about your work experience and take us up to the present.
Great. I was born in Neosho, Missouri, which is a city, designated a city long before the statistical definition of city came into play. It's 10,000 people. It was when I was there, and it is now, many years later. Most people would recognize Neosho because it's just south of Joplin, Missouri, which had the terrible tornado a couple of years ago. So I grew up in that kind of Ozark environment, and you know, throughout high school, lived there. I was one of those situations where the family didn't move much, so I had a really stable small town growing up experience. I went to college in Southwest Baptist University in Bolivar, Missouri, and worked in grocery stores, worked in retail, mowed lawns, whatever you could do to, you know, get some spending money in those days. I decided early on I wanted to go to graduate school and wanted to do a counseling degree, so I did a master's in counseling specializing in family therapy, and then a doctorate in career assessment. So some people would say I'm either really confused or I'm eclectic. I prefer eclectic. During those days, I worked with a not-for-profit that helped get a lot of people off the streets, rehab some people. It actually started churches and clothing ministries and such as that.
Now, was this in Bolivar?
No, this was actually in Atlanta.
In Atlanta.
Okay. In Atlanta. And so I spent about 15 years in the not-for-profit world nationally, and then did a graduate degree in administration here locally. And from there, worked as a consultant for a few years, worked with Pike Family Nurseries for about 9 years as their VP of HR, and then most recently, Grizzard Communications Group for the last 6 years.
Well, fantastic. So that is that's a pretty rich history.
Well, I really feel like all of my not-for-profit experience brought me to a good place with Grizzard, because one of the things we do is help really large not-for-profits with their fundraising and their branding and their strategies for getting enough money to do the good that they do in the world.
Yeah, and that's important. So that's exactly where I was going next. Tell us a little bit about what Grizzard Communications Group does overall, and then certainly what you do within that group.
Okay, sure. Grizzard Communications Group is about 90 years old.
Wow.
We're part of Omnicom. You may have read in the news, Omnicom and Publicis just merged. We're part of those holding companies. Our niche is that we help really large not-for-profits, regional and national, with all of their branding, research analytics, building strategies for raising the money they need, and then actually helping them implement those strategies so that they can raise the money that they need to do all the good things they do in the world. Some of our clients are one of the newest ones is Muscular Dystrophy Association. Some of us probably grew up watching Jerry Lewis's telethons. Salvation Army.
Still don't know how you could stay up all that time. I mean, that's incredible.
I know. It's a whole weekend, basically, right?
Wow. How do you do it? But continue on, sir.
And then we've had Salvation Army as a client for the better part of 60 years. A lot of the national cancer institutes are clients of ours. We do a lot of work in the animal care space. What else? Rescue missions. So we're kind of all over the place helping those kinds of philanthropic organizations help people.
Okay.
And it's pretty gratifying to do. Wow. My role is Chief Human Resources Officer, and it's really cool because I got to basically invent this role in conjunction with the senior leadership, because they knew they wanted to build a culture that really was a preferred work environment so that it would attract the kind of people in the war for talent that's out there. Everyone's looking for great talent.
Yes.
So how does Grizzard position itself to be at the front of that battle so that people, when they think about a great place to work, think about Grizzard?
Yeah.
And so the senior team and I designed this role, and what we've worked on is how do we increase engagement?
Okay.
How do we increase our retention? How do we motivate and engage people to, you know, to really work with their heart and their mind as well as their hands? And that's been pretty exciting to do over the last several years.
Yeah, is that some groundbreaking work? I mean, in terms of doing that at Grizzard, is that something that you began in an effort of, or is that something that you just continued on, someone else began?
We really began it together. The senior team, our C-suite executives and I and the president really had a vision about what we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started building those cultural changes over time.
Ah.
And it does take time. So after about 6 years, we have met or exceeded actually exceeded the holding company benchmarks in each of those engagement categories. And we've been listed 3 out of 3 years in Atlanta Journal Constitution's top 100 places to work. So I think we're making some progress in that regard.
I think you are. I'm hearing some great things. As you know, we've got one of our graduates, class of 2013, Mr. Jeremy Hazelwood, that has stepped over to Grizzard.
Yes, we do. He's in our strategy integration department.
Yes, and I've heard your strategy integration department has never looked so good.
That's what Jeremy says.
Say, where I got it from. So how do you define employee engagement?
I think you can define it a lot of ways. I like to go pretty basic with this. To me, when you get people waking up in the morning, wanting to go to work, caring about what they do, and owning the results of that as if it was their own, you have an engaged employee.
Boy, that certainly sounds like a fantastically simple and elegant, concise, parsimonious definition. And I would guarantee that a gentleman to your right and a gentleman to your left would agree with you highly. And so we'll hit the pause button as we continue to talk here with Gary, and we'll step over to Mr. Sean Wright. So, Sean, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing well, Alvin. It's interesting to me because today we're talking about engagement and value, and you gave me a promotion during the introductory portion.
I did?
I went from being a Georgia development to global development.
I did? Oh.
I'm feeling kind of full and puffed up right now. So. And highly successful.
Well, if I misspoke somewhere, I love that.
Hey, in the real estate business, you know, if we can increase that measure, that's great.
Well, you know what? I love it when a guy gets puffed up. That's good stuff. So to begin, please tell us a little bit about yourself, and starting with your original birthplace and home.
Sure.
A bit about your work experience and take us up to the present.
Absolutely. I don't think I could have moved much further from my home, being that maybe if I was from Alaska or something. But I'm from Seattle, and I grew up in a little town just outside of Seattle with two younger brothers, and had a wonderful childhood. Went through I actually, you know, I was one of those guys that was working hard to achieve not a lot in high school, but I ended up getting somebody saw that I had some potential and gave me a chance, and I ended up graduating in the top of my class from at Seattle University. So
wow.
That was a good thing, and I went into business with a guy that I met at Seattle University. I mortgaged my house and took a minority share in a business and took a lot of risk, and I just got the chance to be with a small working group out in Texas with him, and he's an incredibly successful general contractor today. So I learned a lot from him, and had a really difficult life event right around the millennium, and I went to Thailand and thought about the meaning of life on the beach for about a month and a half, and what would I do? What would it look like? Who would I be? Where would I live? And, you know, I flew into Atlanta with the intentions of getting to Savannah or Charleston, and ended up working for John Wieland Holmes. And it's amazing when you just let things go and, you know, let God kind of direct your path, some wonderful things can happen. And I got a great job with John Wieland, wonderful opportunity to learn about development and to meet great relationships here in Atlanta, and moved on from there. And Batson Cook Development Company, where Chad and I met, has a longstanding history of, well, this might not apply to Chad, but it certainly does to me, of taking guys that didn't have a lot of economic, and giving them a chance, putting them in business. Ah. And we ended up forming Georgia Development Partners with Batson Cook Development Company, and our principal role was to provide merchant lot development. So national builders come into the marketplace looking for developed lots, and we were, that was our division specialty, if you will, with Batson Cook. And so Georgia Development Partners was a partner with Batson Cook, and what else, Alvin?
Well, no, that's it. That we wanted to get a good feel for the person behind the leader, and so you certainly helped us with that. And so we'll turn our attention now to the man to my immediate right, Chad Wright.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. So tell us a little bit about Chad Wright, a little bit about where you were born, and take us kind of up to the present today, because you're a fascinating guy.
Well, I appreciate that. I like to see another perspective. Born and raised in the city of Atlanta, so I'm an actual native. There are a few of us still running around here.
Yeah, but, not many.
Not many. But, not many. I always say anyone who moves here before the Olympics in 96 qualifies. That's before the city really changed.
Well, then I am. Yeah, I'm native,
well,
too.
There you go. Welcome. Welcome. I went, as you mentioned, to the University of Richmond and got a degree in biology and business and went on and got my master's in environmental management. From Duke, and came back and worked with an environmental engineering firm not too far from Kennesaw's campus, actually.
I frequented
the campus a good bit while I worked there. But I was there for about 2 years and really loved the work. It was a passion of mine and an interest, and I was in their water quality group there. And the corporate structure at the time didn't really match my inner needs. And as Gary had mentioned, too, finding what really makes a person motivated and engaged and really buy into the system and the company and the overall corporate culture, there was something lacking there for me.
Interesting.
Personally. And I had a very strong entrepreneurial itch. And as Sean kind of mentioned, I had the opportunity I was approached by a couple of older guys who rode dogs, who'd been in the business a while on the development side. And they needed some young blood to come in and move some projects forward. And they offered me the opportunity, and I jumped on it. And haven't really looked back. A lot of my friends from the environmental group thought I'd sold out to the dark side, jumping in with some developers. But I said, I think my happiness is important, too.
Yeah, exactly right.
And, you know, serendipitously, things come back around. And, you know, I met Sean through a partnership with Batson Cook Development. We worked on a but I worked with them on a couple of their development jobs as a partner, and it spent some time with Sean, and we got to spend some time in the office, and I think our outlooks on life and our motivational things that motivate us aligned, and I had the opportunity to jump in with him on GDP, and we've got an environmental arm that does stream restoration work and bioengineered wetland construction. And so somehow I've able to pull it all back around together and make my parents happy that my degree matches somewhat what I do.
So you're one of the rare few, right?
Yeah.
That has found something that you actually went to school for.
Fighting every day.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you a little bit about that as well. You know, you have a Bachelor of Arts degree in biology.
Right.
With a business minor, and then now you're working with Georgia Development Partners. So it would seem to be at odds, but when you look at what you do, it's a perfect match, right?
It's the overall perspective. As I said, serendipitously, it has become a perfect match, and there's no way I could have drawn it out on paper at age 25, 26 to get here. Sometimes you just have to listen to your inner call and trust that opportunities and doors open up and have the ability to recognize them when they do and keep trying to match what's best for you and listen to your heart and your desires.
Well, that's a great takeaway, certainly for the people that are listening to our program. And it's very interesting that today it's a little different. I've got two gentlemen from the same business. And so feedback is something we do in our program at the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. And I've got Leonard Adams from Quest 35 Housing listening in here in the pseudo green room, but certainly our studio. And so he would tell you, yeah, Alvin always harps on feedback, you know. And so we've got Sean and we've got Chad. So, Sean, tell me, what is it about Chad that you really like?
Well, I think our listeners could probably make a good distinction initially. He speaks very clearly, very intentionally, and is very engaging.
And so, Chad, what is it you really like about this Sean guy over here?
I think his principles are some of the most solid. I remember in his office, talking about vision and envisioning of where you want to be in life. I remember sometimes I'd squat in his office over at Batson Cook Development when he wasn't there. And I'd sit at his computer and I'd look at his wall, and he had all these maps and visualizations of printouts of families, or whether it be retirement locations, just an overall map of the vision of where he wanted to be in different stages in his life.
I remember
looking at that and saying, you know what, that's impressive. He's actually put it out there, and he's making himself, every time he comes into the desk to work, he's making himself accountable of, this is where I need to be in life, what I'm working towards. And that really struck me. And then, again, his character, he's a very charismatic guy and a great leader. So it's been a fantastic opportunity to step underneath his leadership and be able to move, make some headways.
Well, thank you. I'm actually honored to be in the same room with all three of you gentlemen. It's fantastic for me. And you know, when we talk about engagement and you talk about vision boards that Sean has on the wall, and I'll turn to you, Gary, is that kind of the way it works in organizations that are engaged, that there's some vision that they put out there and they put metrics around it, and so we all have something to point toward that we're all going to hold each other accountable for to get there? Is that kind of the way, in a nutshell, how it works? We're going to dig a little deeper, but certainly your thoughts?
It's really interesting because so many organizations have those message statements or vision statements or mission statements and then do nothing whatsoever consistently with implementing those on a daily basis. I think it does start, though, with that common shared vision that the leaders of the organization have about who they want to be, who and what kinds of products they want to produce, at what quality level and for whom, and what are the guiding principles, motives that influence their behavior. So it serves as a real focal point, and you know, both Sean and Chad talked about the value systems of the organization. That's really what culture is. It is that stated value system that guides everything else you do.
Yeah, that's impressive, and thank you for that elucidation of engagement at the higher level. So when you think about the work you do, certainly at Grizzard, and the things that – are you okay with me shortening the name to Grizzard?
Sure.
All right. And so how does an organization benefit from these higher levels of engagement?
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe that when people are engaged, the level of work they do is actually qualitatively different. So when people engage with their full minds, when people take responsibility for their actions, when people are motivated by the quality of the output and by the satisfaction they get, I think we just do a higher level of work. We're calling for people to be adults in the workplace, right?
Right.
And not children that need all of these rules and guidelines and structure. Let people do what they're able to do. So I think the output is actually different, but I think the organizations themselves benefit in some other ways. I think tenure is going to be longer. You're going to have less turnover. And if you look at the costs associated with that turnover, very, very significant.
Mm-hmm.
4, 5, 6 times a person's annual salary just to backfill a position when they leave. And then you think about the brain drain that goes on when these people leave our organizations prematurely. So I think there are some actual dollar benefits. And if you look at the top 100 best companies to work for, those are typically the industry leaders in profitability as well.
Interesting. So what you're saying is that companies that are focused on engagement are different than other companies somehow, certainly quantitatively. And it feels different, so qualitatively there as well, right?
Yes.
Okay, so with that in mind, Sean and Chad, I want you to give me your thoughts on what makes you different from other contractors.
I think for us, kind of feeding off of what Gary said, is that we really were intentional about coming up with what is our culture, what is the inner workings of Georgia Development Partners going to be. And from there is a very clear vision. We've been very measured in hiring those people that buy into the value system and interviewing them and putting them through the right processes and measures to gauge that, are they going to fit? Is this going to disrupt our flow in the overall culture of the company? But we've invested from a contracting world. We sometimes joke that our motto is we're trying to bring nobility back to the industry. Back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the contractors were held in high esteem in the community. They were master craftsmen.
Artisans.
They're artisans. And somewhere along the way, lost track, and they've become almost opportunist, I think, in a lot of people's minds, and not a collaborative part of the fabric of the community. And that is something that, you know, Sean and I and a lot of our employees, too, have development backgrounds. So we've been on the other side of the table of working with the contractor and understand the frustration of sometimes if you have a vision and something in your heart you want done and they're not quite listening to you, they're doing it their way, whether it be from hiding behind litigious contracts a lot of times to not really rolling up their sleeves and being collaborative and open and engaged. So from our standpoint, we saw it as an opportunity. And so we've hired people that are engaged, that are collaboratively minded, that reach across the table to the architects and the engineers and can speak their language and engage with them on a higher level conversation. And what happens over time, Alvin, is that when that occurs, you gain trust and you gain a perspective from their standpoint. So the schedules increase. There's less disruption in the work from paperwork that comes through because communication's already been key. And in addition, you've worked through their trust and their partnership, their design becomes a little bit better as well. They're more open to you to say, you know what, what is your thought on the constructability of this design up front? And so it's just a better value overall for the owner, for the architect, and for the contractor in the end products.
Yeah, very. You're right, Sean. The guy is very succinct, right? So your thoughts, especially around that community connectivity and how that factors into the difference that you bring as a contractor versus other people perhaps in the market? Because that's not something I would normally associate with a contractor.
Well, from our perspective, we're trying to build meaningful places. And, you know, it's ultimately about people and affecting people's lives, whether it be an economic development project or, something that's affecting, healthcare, or it's ultimately about people. And I had a little synaptic response as Chad was talking, just thinking about people and our hiring practices. And we go through a lot of analytics, and usually, by the time I get a chance to sit down with somebody and have lunch with them, they're smart, they're qualified. But one of my favorite things to do is really simple. I look at how they treat the wait person that's serving us a meal.
And if they make
eye contact, if they say thank you, it says a lot. And you put that person in charge of a $2 or a $5 or a $10 million project, at some level, they're going to be reaching across the table to a person. And it's how are they inside? How do they connect with people? And it's really simple sometimes. And that has just been such an effective precursor of people's ability to work collaboratively together and to care. And really, it's helped differentiate our company in the marketplace. And people can't oftentimes touch it, but they know it's there. And that feedback we get is you behave differently. And it was by intentional one-degree decision-making all the way along the process that led us to this positive outcome that was for the good of both of us. And oftentimes, we ask ourselves to step back and, if our company went away, who would miss us? And it's such a great question to put things in perspective. For us, it's a lot of architects and engineers. They're used to really, being set up in some triangular diatribe where they're the guys getting put out. And they hold your fate so often.
Right.
And, in the construction process or development process, oftentimes we're the early holders of fate. And how do you treat that person when you have leverage and control often will be reciprocated in the end. And that's where really beautiful things can happen that don't make a lot of sense in today's construction, contract stipulations. And we outpunch our weight class, I think, as a company because of the way we treat people that serve us. We're in a service business, and we're supposed to be servants.
Gary, what are your thoughts? I saw you shaking your head, my friend.
Yeah, it was just really resonating, Sean, with what you said, particularly when you said we build places of meaning. How many construction companies out there build houses or playgrounds? They don't build places of meaning. So even the interpretation of what you do filters down to everyone in the organization. So, for example, that person who's swinging a hammer or using a saw, they're not just hammering a nail or cutting a piece of wood or sheetrock. They're building a place of meaning. At Grizzard, people who look at spreadsheets all day long, analyze data from various databases about fundraising, they can either say, I'm building a spreadsheet, or they can say, my spreadsheet is helping the American Red Cross or the Salvation Army take someone off the street today. Wow. So just the way you assess meaning and value to what you do, I mean, that's the heart of engagement. That's the heart of engaging culture.
Well, that's a great point. And I will tell you that that was one of the reasons why I wanted Mr. Leonard Adams, the CEO and president of his company, to be here today, is because this kind of conversation is, in my opinion, extremely important when we're talking about how do you get to the next level as an organization? How do you, you know, evolve? How do you get to the next level as an individual? What are you thinking about? How do you focus on it? And last but not least, how do you test an organization's commitment to a culture of engagement? Can you speak a little bit about that one?
Well, I think both Sean and Chad got at the heart of it. You hire people that fit your culture. You hire people who are congruent with your cultural values. That doesn't mean that you hire a, you know, a very monochrome, monolithic kind of workforce. Not at all. Mm-hmm. It means that you have your cultural values that inform what you do, and you bring those values into the interview process. You hire people. It's okay for people to stretch that. Mm-hmm. It's not okay for them to live outside of your cultural values, because that dilutes your culture. And I think one of the real tests, Alvin, is when you hire someone who may be a superstar, mm-hmm. and they do not fit the culture, you made a hiring mistake, what do you do? If you really believe in your culture, if you really believe in your values, you have to address that really directly. And it might be through coaching to get them in sync with your values, or it might be even to the point of separating them from your organization because those values are irreconcilable. And I'm talking about the values about how you treat people, how you manage people, how you work with clients, how you work with your vendors and your business partners.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so, Sean and Chad, do you always get the hire right?
No. <It's>, It's and he, yeah, as Gary can probably profess, and I think most folks know that you can interview somebody for a long time, and even if as Sean says, that all the indicators and cues are there, sometimes there's just something else going on that you can never pick up in an interview, and it usually takes 3, 4, 5, 6 months to start to show itself, but eventually it'll kind of grow and become very noticeable over time. And to Gary's point, I think you really do have to address it. And I think our approach typically has been to, and it's been a learning process as we've grown as a company, but I think the first question we normally ask is what have we not done?
Okay.
As a leadership team, what have we not done that may be the cause to this behavior we've seen? And stepping back and analyzing. And if we usually will put a thing or two out there directly to the employee of we've seen some weaknesses and make sure it's clearly communicated what is at risk, whether it be a cultural value, you're not engaged with the architect, or you didn't send your daily pictures out to the owner or given them proper respect, whatever it may be,
right.
And give them the opportunity to rectify the behavior. And then over time, if it isn't there, you know, as Gary mentioned, it's critical to protect the culture, and it's a gut-wrenching decision, because our culture is also built around a family of people. And you know, Sean always says, when I look around my company, I don't see what my company's worth. I see how many mouths I feed every day within this company, and the people we interact, from our subcontractors all the way down. And it's his obligation at that point, he says, for their benefit, to make sure that we continue to be the company we say we're going to be.
I think on a complementary perspective, too, some of the most difficult decisions that I've ever been faced with is where you have a really high-performance employee that from, you know, the quantifiable metrics is really achieving on a high level. And then you look at, you know, the wake that they leave behind them. And that's tough, particularly in this economic environment that we're coming out of. Is you know, do I have the courage to send the message to the rest of the family that I am so in alignment with our culture and disciplined and willing to make difficult decisions that I'm going to take a high performance person out of the system because it's the long term best thing to do for our organizational health? And as painful as that is, you get an immediate lift from the organization because they oftentimes know you, I'm the last person to know usually. and people are looking, you know, why did you not make that decision? And when you finally come to that decision, you get a lot of support because there wasn't a good fit. Mm-hmm. And I think the organization is a sum of its parts that equals a much greater sum than that one high-performance individual. So,
and to continue with that analogy, sometimes you can have addition by subtraction.
There's an Alvinism.
Don't know how I came with it. I love that. So tell us a little bit about Georgia Development Partners with regard to some of the projects you've done that stick out in your minds.
Sure. One clear distinction, Chad, for me is, we like to say that we build the places people want to go and the ways to get there. Mm-hmm. But one really outstanding experience for me was the 173rd Airborne Memorial at Fort Benning. And this was a memorial that people over 15 or 20 years had saved and, you know, donated $5 and $10 bills to bring this $400,000 project to fruition. And, you know, the 173rd is an existing unit that's still in combat right now. And just they brought in people from around the world. And, you know, it was, I think for me, it was like the experience at the wall.
Wow.
I mean, you just tangible people and lives, you know, when they put those photographs. And so when you say you're building meaningful places, that's a way that honors our country and people that have given their lives and people that are dealing with, you know, issues throughout their lives as a result of what they went through. And so that was for me, it was a real watershed moment just because of what it meant to others and to our company. So,
Chad?
Well, I think I probably, on a broader basis, you know, for me, we've a number of projects where you see the owner, you can see them at a little bit of an impasse of knowing what they want done, but not quite how to get there, and even directing you as the contractor and being able to, again, through our servant leaders that we've hired from project managers to superintendents, seeing them at the end of the project having come up with creative solutions instead of stopping a project and saying, hey, here's five problems and call me when you get the answer. It's, hey, I ran into this, and this is what we tell our guys. I ran into this, but here are three solutions we think might work if you want to consider them. Right. It always keeps things on an upbeat, and the end result of that is we always tell our project managers, too, you're working for the reference. So when those reference letters come in from those projects, and we've got them on our website, those are our trophies. Those are our memorials, so to speak. And so from a broader standpoint, I'd say that it's just the overall satisfaction of knowing you've pleased an owner.
That's a great takeaway. You're working for the reference. So have you done projects outside of Georgia?
No, that's part of our strategy is I think to engage the owners and our architects and engineers and develop the relationships, we work within 100, we draw 150-mile string around Metro Atlanta. So that takes us to Augusta, to Macon, to Columbus, and back up a little bit into Dalton, North Georgia. And that's really been strategic.
But that's a culture thing, too. I think we want our people to be home with their families at night, and that is a big deal. We could certainly pursue other markets,
mm-hmm.
Your culture changes when you're putting somebody in a trailer in a hotel and they're away from their family for extended periods of time. And so that was one of the decision variables, and it comes full circle back to culture, and we're committed to that.
That's pretty interesting. And so with regard to that, you talk about culture perhaps changing a little bit. And I know that we talked earlier, Gary, that Jeremy Hazelwood has come over to work with you guys. Now, Jeremy is a little bit younger than me, so there's some generational differences. So with regard to engagement, particularly in your sweet spot, which is employee engagement, tell us a little bit about how people engage or not engage in the workplace based on their generational differences.
Very interesting question, Alvin. You know, I think back to the world my father lived in, and there were essentially no real employment choices. You felt good to have a job. You felt good to be paid. You felt good to make enough money to put bread on the table and maybe get off Sunday to go to church,
mm-hmm.
right? And that has changed so much. Even in my generation, we've seen that shift toward wanting more choices, wanting more input into our work environment. And when we look at the Gen Xers and Gen Yers, you know, the big thing is balance of time, balance of life, which in itself is kind of a contradictory concept, I guess, because if you have work-life balance, does that mean you get to spend 50% of your time at home? I don't think so. But the idea of Gen Xers and Gen Yers is they want to make sure that employee value proposition works for them.
Okay.
So is what they get out of the work environment, pay, recognition, the opportunity to do meaningful work, the opportunity to own projects, does it at least equal or exceed what they get out from
okay.
the organization?
Okay.
And so I think generationally you see people in Gen X, Gen Y wanting that balance, that time, that sense of making a difference in the world, and that's how you get them engaged.
So what tips do you have for us to be able to manage that? And, of course, you got a gentleman on your right and a gentleman on your left who perhaps have opportunities to learn, and I certainly do. Mm-hmm. So what do I need to know? How can I help those generational differences to really minimize and be able to squeeze the juice out of all they bring? Because they're very, very valuable part of what we try to do organizationally.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the big things is do not see your people as tools. Do not see them as implements. See them as people. And that means you don't just use them to accomplish a product or a service at the end of the day. You invest in them in terms of their career development, their skill development. You converse with them. You listen to them. You want to know what their child is doing in soccer or on the ball field or at college or in their volunteer activities. And to try to engage those associates to the level that there is a relationship there where they look at you not so much as boss or owner, but as player coach, mentor, so that they believe and feel that you are invested in their success, not just your company's success.
Very interesting. Sean, Chad?
I think, too, what has been effective in our company is a degree of transparency, where we are across a broad spectrum of our people having the mindset of ownership thinking, where I think you ask a lot of people, well, how much does a company make? And they're like, well, you know, 30%, 40%. And and when you really take it from a straightforward, like a household budget, and you just work through the metrics, there's an epiphany that, you know, little bolts matter and turning off an idling machine matters. And lots of people can understand that. And at the end of the day, if you bring it full circle through a clear and concise and thoughtful incentive compensation plan, you can really pull it all together. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that has worked well, and Chad really is responsible for this, and he wouldn't take credit for it, of course, but is looking at organic relationships between some of our younger, you know, early 20s superintendents and some of our more seasoned project managers or superintendents where there's a 20 or 30 year age spread. And they will start to – you can see that there's a natural brotherhood there or father's – you know, there's a – and to create a informal but a little more formal mentorship, mentee mentorship. So they've got an advocate in the company that's got experience. There's that knowledge transfer that's happening in a purposeful but organic way.
Wow.
We have been the direct beneficiaries of that. And it's just worked well for both parties, both from a fulfillment perspective, from somebody getting to shepherd, and obviously, you know, somebody that's accelerating their career advancement through receiving some leadership training.
Yeah. Chad?
Yeah, well, along those lines, too, I jumped to thinking about our company retreats where we have at least once a year, sometimes twice a year, we'll take the entire company out for a weekend, and it's a time for people to have fellowship, see people outside of their work environment, their work roles, and more importantly, it's to capture their attention for the weekend to really reinforce. We've had new hires that have come in to reinforce what our culture, what our policies, procedures, and giving them the opportunity of understanding that and coming back at the end of that feeling like they understand the big picture. And as Sean says, very transparent. He'll go through all the financials of the company and put it right up there on the PowerPoint screen for everybody to see. So everyone knows where we're tracking as a company financially and how we're doing, so that every, as Sean said, every bit of measure they put out in the field, they know where it's going.
So in the essence, what you're saying, allow me to kind of aggregate it, is you're looking to build a relationship. It doesn't matter whether or not they're generational or not. You're trying to bridge generations by building that relationship. And so if you, when you're taking your employees away and doing this retreat, you're building it not only organizationally from the top down by explaining everything that goes on in the company and the financials, et cetera, but you also want them to talk amongst themselves and build a relationship personally. Did I get that close?
Yeah, most certainly.
Yes.
Okay, and is that one of the best practices for being able to help with engagement from the bottom up?
It really is, to the extent that peers connect with peers, and I don't mean necessarily organizational peers, but, you know, people connecting in the workplace. Mm-hmm. The more that happens, the more stable the workforce becomes, because after all, I don't want to not work with Alvin anymore or Chad or Sean anymore. That's part of my work family, if you will. Mm-hmm. So extending those relationships and deepening those relationships really preserves a lot of stability, I think, in the workforce and raises the engagement score.
I think one other thing to note, too, is that what it also allows, and something we've had to work on as the company has grown, is it allows for direct communication across, you know, across the lines of the quote, you know, company structure, so that instead of an issue having to go up to Sean to come back down on the other side, it's a direct interaction from one employee to the other because they trust each other and feel comfortable communicating. Say, hey, listen, this is bothering me a little bit, and here's why.
And that's a great point. And so when I think through the work I'm doing on my dissertation, and I'm thinking through frameworks and theories, et cetera, I'm going to look over at you, Gary. Is there a particular theoretical framework, a model, for increasing engagement?
I think there is, and, you know, it's one that has been around a while, but basically Frederick Hertzberg is pretty hard to beat in that he essentially boiled down engagement to two factors. How well do you treat people? And that is the workplace fair? Is it just? Is it safe? Does it make sense? Are people treated equitably? Are the rules fairly administered, et cetera? And then the second question, how do you use people? Hmm. And he meant that in the very best sense of the word, use people. Are you using their minds? Are you using their passion? Are you igniting really what they want to be about in their life? And are you contributing to their opportunities to grow and develop? And so to me, that theoretical framework has served me throughout my career. Let's make sure we're treating people fairly. If there's something in the workplace that needs fixing, let's fix it, and let's not expect a standing ovation about it. Let's just fix it. It's the right thing to do. And then let's figure out ways to help people develop and grow to their fullest potential on the job.
Yeah, when I love the word igniting. What is the Grizzard's tagline?
Ignite. Glad you picked up on that.
I think you said that for a purpose.
Well, it becomes a way of thinking. It really does, because, you know, we're trying to ignite the passion of the donors that support the clients that we serve. We're trying to ignite the passion of the people that work at Grizzard so that we get the very best product for our clients, and we're trying to also ignite our leadership team to make sure we're doing those things around using people well and treating them well.
And I actually didn't have that teed up as a question, but it sounded so good, and you just walked right into it. So we're having a great conversation with Gary Jones, the Chief Human Resources Officer at Grizzard Communications Group, a gentleman who has over 20 years of corporate-level human resources experience in a diverse set of industries, and he's been talking to that in a way that that even I can understand. And Sean Hart is the president of Georgia Development Partners, serving to position DDP as a contractor of choice by the leading and the motivating and the growing of the regional of a regional team of employees, subcontractors, and consultants. And certainly we've got Chad right here to my immediate right, who serves as the vice president and a project executive for GDP, or Georgia Development Partners. And in this role, Chad is responsible for identifying, promoting, and pursuing new market opportunities for GDP, certainly the lifeblood of any business. And so, as gentlemen, as I think through our conversation, I just wonder, you know, in the name of your company is communications. And so with regard to what you do, and certainly with regard to what Georgia Development Partners does, I want you to talk a little bit about how technology and social media has either helped or hindered employee engagement, organizational engagement.
Well, I think it's you know, something that can really be used to leverage engagement, because you know, you have everything out there now. Email is antiquated. I mean, Gen Xers, Gen Yers are wondering, you know, they're more on Pinterest and Twitter, et cetera. But we use all of those opportunities to both attract and retain associates in our workplace. And we found that, you know, the internet has really broken down a lot of barriers. It allows access to thousands and millions of people instantly. And so we try to leverage that as best we can, both in building culture and in attracting and retaining our associates, and obviously in the work we do for our clients.
Yeah, and that's pretty impressive. But you are a communications company, so certainly you work with nonprofits, and you work with them to try to help integrate that technology and social media into the way that they communicate with others.
Certainly.
And so I don't know to what extent that actually works when it comes to Georgia Development Partners. Can you guys kind of give me a little insight on that one?
Well, I think oftentimes for us, the interview before the interview is, you know, what's on our website and what's our Twitter or what's our Facebook page look like? I mean, because it gives prospective employees. I remember out of California, a company that worked with Jim Collins before they started DPR Construction. And I remember going on their website a couple years ago and clicking on Life at DPR. And it was just this beautiful video to music, and it had, you know, and it was just so engaging that I found myself emotionally overcome by it, because I want to embody that. I want to be like that. And I see that in some of our younger employees, that when they upload something on that Facebook and they get another like, or it's this engaging, connective process, and it really benefits our company on an aggregated basis, because it's shaping the perception of who we are.
And notice he said the younger people who are posting on Facebook.
That excludes me.
Well, I mean, it's...
Yeah, so that's the key to find the right person to manage that. And that would be that Generation Y guy that Gary's talking about, or gal.
That is too funny. So, gentlemen, who have you admired that has impacted your leadership style? Who's provided the best models of leadership for you? And we'll start with you first this time, Chad.
Oh boy! Well, you know, for me, it's honestly it's within the family, and we've talked about this at some of our company retreats. Sean asked the same question, and to kind of go around and have people say that. But my grandfather was a big influence. He just the way he carried himself within the community. He lived by a principle, and it did well economically and financially, but never gave up his principles of who he was. And he would walk down the street of a small town in Kentucky, and everyone knew who he was and shook his hand and looked up to him, not because of what he had done, but who he was.
Okay. Gary?
You know, I would have to stay in the family also and say my brother, who retired from Bank of America as head of retail banking for Oklahoma, and much for the same reasons. He grew up small town Missouri like me and did really well for himself, but never lost those core values. And so as he moved from bank to bank and merger to merger and finally ended his career with retirement, he embodied those values. He kept the faith, if you will, of what he had said he'd believed all those years.
Interesting. And Sean?
For me, Stephen Ambrose wrote about Major Dick Winters. And Dick Winters was the featured leader in Band of Brothers. Just leading from the front, never asking anyone to do something that he wouldn't do himself, and humble, and taking it straight at it all the time.
Fantastic. So how does each of you actually define leadership, both personally and professionally?
I would say inspiration in a lot of ways, getting people to do something that they may not know how to do within themselves and getting them to do that through themselves.
Well, that's a tough question. When I think about, am I a leader and how would I define that, I guess it would be two questions. Am I making a difference in the organization I serve?
Mm-hmm.
Am I making a difference in the lives of those that I'm serving within that organization? So if I'm being a positive contributor to their growth and development and to the success of our organization, then I think I'm exercising leadership.
Very succinct.
I think I'm in a high degree of alignment with Gary. I think that, you know, leadership is the ability to take a circumstance or an event to a higher level, to raise the tide for all involved. That's leadership. I think, you know, the Harvard Business Review will tell you that, you know, leadership in one word is influence, you know. But I think it's about creating better outcomes, whatever it may be, for the people involved.
Interesting. So are you gentlemen involved in the community much? I know from a Georgia Development Partners, you certainly some of your projects are certainly community-based. So kind of talk a little bit about why you're so involved in the community, and do you think community involvement can work for everybody? Is there a place there?
Absolutely, and I'll let Chad speak more specifically to this. And this has been an issue for me personally, and I think it's reflected throughout our organization that, you know, I'm a firm believer in being – low profile and secret about your giving. I think it has a lot of value when you're not beating your chest and showing everybody the check you wrote or what you did. But I think it's important for people to connect with a company that is giving back. And so I'm personally growing with this, and organizationally we're growing with this because I'm starting to get comfortable with it.
Well, I think within talking about engagement and having the company as a vehicle for all of our employees to be able to give. So they at their level of, say, of salary may not be able to give at a certain level they'd like to something that's either touched their lives or meant something within their community. But we encourage every employee to recommend a nonprofit that they're involved with, that they want to be a part of, that we as a company can perhaps just leverage their idea and our company resources and make a difference. And it's whether that be from a volunteer night at an organization to a check that Sean will sign. It's an open invitation.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I agree. It's really essential to be engaged in community. I mean, that's where we live. That's where we do life, if you will. It's not just at work. It's in the communities we serve and the communities we live. At Grizzard, we give people 2 days a year to work for any bona fide charitable organization they want to work for. It does not have to be one of our clients. It does have to be one whose values are, you know,
in alignment
with those that we serve.
Yeah.
But basically, beyond that, there's no questions asked, and they can use up to 2 days with pay to go work at Salvation Army or a food bank or you know, any of the local charities that are meaningful to them. And we think it's important to demonstrate from the highest levels throughout the organization that giving back to the community is a good thing, and it's something we should do.
And employee engagement does matter, right?
It does matter.
So, you know, the central topic of today really was employee engagement, fact or fantasy. So which one is it, guys, or is it a combination of both?
Fact.
Fact.
Absolutely, fact.
So when is it a fantasy? Perhaps I'd like to throw this out to you, taking a contrarian view. Is there a situation where that you can think of, certainly in your own industries, where there's lip service paid to employee engagement, and it's really not quite happening, and so the benefits aren't being reaped, and so they're preaching fact, but it is actually fantasy?
Well, it kind of reminds me of Tom Peters' books, In Search of Excellence, and he wrote about three of those. In the last book, he says, there is no such thing as an excellent company, which I thought, honesty at last. Okay, so from my point of view, every organization has within it the potential for a lot of engagement and always will fall short of the goal of being 100% engaged. Mm. I mean, it would be a perfect organization with perfect people if that were to happen. So I think it happens, and the reality is there's always that tension within our organizations of who we say we are and who we want to be and who we want to become, and those times when we fall short of that.
Makes sense. Gentlemen?
Well, I mean, I think sometimes, too, it certainly can start as a fantasy, and it's up to, again, talking about leadership and getting them engaged, and it's along the way. How have you arrived to that and the metrics you've used to get there?
Yeah, I think it's the decisions you make as a leader under pressure and the willingness to be true to your principles and the principles of the organization. I think on a big, wide-scale basis, you know, filling up at the BP station for years, you know, we were faced with the, you know, the environmental and care about the environment. But, you know, the senior leadership was doing things that were absolutely contrary to that while that was being – and you think about, you know, the buy-in that maybe some of the incoming, you know, freshly minted grads might have had about – this was their perception. Hey, these guys are really trying to move in this direction and find a balance and things that work for everybody. And that didn't end up being the case.
Yeah.
And that's when I think it really culturally or an Accenture situation where there's a big gap. It's a betrayal, I think.
Yeah,
that's a strong word. But
well, yeah. And, you know, the people that feel it think it's probably not as strong enough, right?
Yeah.
So what are some of the challenges to the growth of GDP as well as Grizzard? I mean, certainly it's not always situations where we know our path and we say, you know, we're going to grow exponentially. What are there any challenges that y'all are looking at perhaps?
Well, I think for us, I think it was maybe Bernie Marcus that said this, that the people that get you to where you are aren't sometimes the people that get you to where you're going.
Okay.
And it's a difficult thing, you know, as you're talking about engagement and alignment. And in our situation where we were evolving from an entrepreneurial driving kind of make it happen cowboy to a structured systems and processes, and, you know, that can feel constrained to a pure entrepreneurial mind. And As your revenues change and your people systems change, it becomes much more difficult, particularly at the margins, to keep that all in alignment. Mm. And you know, for us, I think on the you know with what we're talking about today, that's been probably the single largest problem for us, is just that stretching as you evolve and grow.
And knowing where to stop, I think, in terms of protecting the culture and your company values of. You know, the more you grow and the more layers you got underneath you, you have to work twice as hard to make sure that those your principles as a company and your culture is forced, you know, down all the way to the bottom, so to speak. And so I think for us it's been a very calculated decision of, okay, at what point can we not maintain this? At what point, and we know where to cap our growth and say, this is where we're going to be happy because this is our culture, this is our company, and this is as far as we can grow to maintain that.
At Grizzard, I think one of our big challenges is around talent.
Mm-hmm.
It is such a competitive work environment out there now, or in the labor force. I mean, you know, from the last 3 or 4 years, we basically had lots of applicants for every vacant position. As the economy gets better and we're looking for those very talented, very skilled people in such things as digital marketing or social media, and then finding, you know, really strengthened direct marketing skills and fundraising, that environment has become more and more competitive. So number one, it's harder to find those people. It's harder to differentiate yourself in the workplace with those people. And then, as these guys said, as you bring them on, how do you push that culture in ways that have meaning? Because culture can be reinterpreted, right, by generation and generation. The applications may be different, though the principles are the same. How do you push that culture into the new, I call them newbies, you know, at Grizzard.
Yeah.
And so that culture perpetuates itself and grows.
Yeah. So how do we, what are the tips in there? What are the takeaways, certainly for the people who are listening to us today? Are there certain things you think that really could help with that and help facilitate a smoother transition of people, the newbies, into the culture? What would you recommend?
Well, we do several things. We have a Peer Connect program at Grizzard that allows people to connect in the organization just for the sake of conversation. Tell me what you do, Alvin.
Okay.
How long have you been doing that? How does that process fit into the whole?
Mm-hmm.
We also have a kind of a mentor program, although that's too strong of a word because it's really more relational onboarding, where we assign a veteran Grizzard person to a newbie and help them just kind of move through the process. Where's the town hall meeting held? That kind of thing. Where's the birthday celebration held?
Okay.
Who do I go to for this or that? So I think there's a lot of practical small steps. And, you know, basically, I think it's about creating the kind of welcoming environment in the workplace that you would want your father, mother, sister, brother, husband, wife, significant other to work at.
Hmm. So were you trying to rhyme on that last sentence, or did it just happen
naturally? No, Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali, the spirits just took over.
I love it. I love it. So gentlemen, what does the future look like? We talked about the challenges, but I really want to start winding our conversation down, because, as you know, it's just a few close friends with a few million people listening in. So what does the future look like for Georgia Development Partners, Sean?
How when you define that, I mean, how can I best, what, just in terms of our vision and our strategy, or where we want,
terms of where you see things? Because, you know, when I sat down and met you both, of course, you were referred to me by Lisa Dugan of Vistage, and Lisa actually worked in our program, and she was kind enough to join our program some time ago, and she recommended that I chat with you. The thing that really captivated me was your approach overall. It was holistic. And you're looking at it from a corporate perspective, but you're also looking at it from an employee associate perspective, as well as the suppliers that you work with, as well as the communities in which they're served. So I thought, well, wait a minute. These folks are way more than just contractors. So what is the future? I mean, when I think of the future, it's kind of holistically. It's not any one of those parts.
Sure. Okay. I spend a lot of time thinking about our labor force, and it goes back to that holistic approach. We're a general contractor, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of influence over our subcontractors, and we have a lot of subcontractors. And for me, it's how do we reach deep into their value chain and not corrupt their profitability? How can we complement them as an integrator? How can we bolster their labor force and their intellectual capital and play to our strengths and then play to their strengths and grow together? As a general contractor, we have fewer hurdles in terms of growth. I mean, we add more intellectual capital oftentimes, and the person downstream from us is buying $400,000 and $500,000 pieces of equipment at a time. So we really think about, you know, how do we affect their capital structure? How do we
how do you make it happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you really improve them overall?
Right. What I'm struggling with right now, Alvin, is you wanted to know how can we create, you know, value and engagement through people.
Absolutely.
Our surety gets frustrated when I say, you know, we're not a company that's capital intensive and we build things. We do that. But we're a service business. We're about people. Yeah. And I think in every touch point, it goes back to the waiter in the restaurant. It's how are our people going to treat people all the time? And mm-hmm. whether it's a subcontractor, whether it's we're volunteering at a children's home or when somebody's spouse or in-law pass away, how do we respond to that? I think you probably
a
want
great
some.
View. No, that's a great view of the future. I like what you're thinking about and your vision of what it looks like. Yeah. Gary, what are your thoughts about the future of Grizzard? What do you see that? How do you see things happening?
You know, we have a number of clients who have been with us for years and have used various methods of fundraising, and I think our challenge in the future is to assist them in really developing integrated campaigns that fully leverage the new digital world and all that that means, so that they can reach yet another generation and generations of fundraisers.
Yeah, so you see the legacy. Do you see the legacy in the future going forward, Chad? You see Georgia Development Partners as having a great legacy in the community?
I think so. I think what we've also seen in the shift in the market itself is a need for a collaborative company. The more that government resources have declined and fundings have declined, they're stretched thin, and they need someone who can come in and win a bid and roll up their sleeves and be problem solvers and take on issues for them. And there's a move in the market towards a more collaborative delivery method of construction, and we hope to be at the front end receiving that.
I like that. And so, gentlemen, I must apologize that I've kept you probably a little longer than I anticipated, and certainly if you bear with me just a few more minutes, I do want to ask you, because we're going to get to the final question of our time together, and we're going to make the audio and certainly the video of this, of your answer to this question, available on our web posting. So which book has most impacted your leadership ability?
I would have to go back to Frederick Hertzberg, The Managerial Choice, because it clearly defines how you treat people, how you use people to get the very best out of them and help them succeed in life.
For me, it would be The Alchemist, and it's about discovery of self. And I think to be a truly authentic leader, you need to know yourself, and you need to have courage and the willingness to pursue your dreams and your personal legend.
And there's a book that we make all of our employees read when they join the company called The Go-Giver. And it is a book that talks about how if you give from the heart, that often by not taking but by giving, you'll receive more in the end.
Well, I'll tell you, Gary, Chad, and Sean, on behalf of our learning community, we've learned a great deal from you today. I know I have. And then certainly your thoughts about building and leveraging an engaged organization for greater organizational success has been a key for me. And we appreciate your allowing us to get a little bit of your time and then bring you all together in the studio today. And I'd love to have you back on the show sometime if we can ever make that work. Is that a deal?
Sure.
Certainly. Thank you, Alan.
And I know you're driving up from Noonan, so that can be a challenge sometimes.
Thank you, Alan.
And so with that in mind, can you tell our listening community how they can contact you by either email and or by phone?
Sure. Sean Hart, Georgia Development Partners. Email is shart@gdpbuilds.com. And our phone number is 404-228-6949. Thank
Perfect.
You, Alvin.
Thank you.
Gary Jones, gary.jones@grizzard.com, 404-606-2005.
And Sean gave the phone number for Georgia Development Partners, but my email address is cwright@gdpbuilds.com.
So, gentlemen, with that smile, we'll bring today's edition of Global Leader Radio to a close. And we invite all our listeners to check our web presence for previous interviews and links to valuable leadership resources. Also, please drop me an email at acm0996@kennesaw.edu if you have recommendations for guests. And as I said earlier, all our guests today were recommended by someone else. And of course, the great Tom Darrow is the one that referred you, is right, Gary? And,
right.
And Tom still owes another round of golf, doesn't he?
He absolutely does.
Yeah, I think so. So if you have recommendations for guests, again, please drop me an email. And for those of you interested in our award-winning Executive MBA program, please go to the eMBA icon on our Global Leader Radio site to connect to us and sign up for an information session. So join us again at the same location for the next edition of Global Leader Radio, the show that discusses ideas that matter with passionate people who care. So have a great week.
Global Leader Radio is brought to you by the Executive MBA program at Kennesaw State University. Take charge of your personal development and professional career today by learning more at KSUEMBA.com. And join us next week as we discuss ideas that matter with people who care.